We're back with more of Lake Effect. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. If there is one period of American history that seems to have been well explored, it's this country's founding. From de Tocqueville to Ron Chernow, from the landing of the Pilgrims to our break from England, the process from going from colony to democracy has been written about extensively. But Brad Meltzer proves that even a well-traveled route has some undiscovered side streets.
Meltzer is a mystery novelist by trade, and while his latest book is nonfiction, it is every bit the compelling mystery of his novels. The First Conspiracy presents the strong evidence of a plot to assassinate George Washington, even before the Declaration of Independence was signed. In writing the book, Meltzer and his co-author Josh Mensch also shine a light on how the case shaped the intelligence and counterintelligence fields today. Meltzer joins us by phone to talk about both of those phenomena. Welcome back to the show.
Great to be back.
So the American Revolution has not exactly been an unexplored subject over the past 250 years or so. So how is it that this particular story has largely fallen through the cracks where so many other, maybe you could even say less significant stories, have remained part of our imagination?
You know, when I first started looking into this story, right, I went to the experts. I went to Pulitzer Prize-winning author Joseph Ellis, and I said to him, do you know this story? It's a secret plot to kill George Washington, right? And I wanted to know, is it real? Is it fake? What is it? And because I'd found it in a footnote, but I'd never heard of it. I was like, where does this come from? And he explained to me, he said, I'll never forget the conversation. He said, Brad, he said, this is a story about Washington spies. And he said, here's the thing. You'll be able to find, and you can find today, exactly how many slaves George Washington owned. You'll never find all his spies. He said, by its nature, what you're searching for will forever be elusive. But he said, you got to take a shot, because if you find it, you're going to have a great book. If you don't, you're going to have an adventure. And he's right that it is a story of his spies, and that's part of the reason we don't know all this stuff, because that's what they're designed to do, is keep things secret. But the other reason why you don't know this story is when George Washington found out about the plot against him, one of the first things he did is they rounded up those responsible. They took one of the main co-conspirators, and they built a gallows and hanged them in front of 20,000 people. Largest public execution at that point in North American history. But when you look at the date of the hanging took place on June 28, 1776. Guess what else was happening in America, right, on June 28, 1776? I mean, it's literally the first draft of the Declaration of Independence is being handed in. The British are truly coming. And with headlines like that, as big as this hanging was, 20,000 people, it still just becomes a footnote.
Well, and not only is the Continental Congress going on and the Declaration being drafted, but the hanging takes place almost immediately after the trial took place. I mean, you know, within what, a day, right? So there's no tell-all memoir being written by the guy at the center of this.
Yeah, and, you know, what George Washington... When George Washington, at the time, the beginning of the Revolution, had his own private bodyguard. And these bodyguards, he asked all of his top regiments, say, give me your four best men. He wanted what they called drilled men, the best of the best. They were a certain height, literally even a certain build, even a certain kind of value system. And George Washington himself personally went through and selected about 50 or so men that were truly the inner circle. These were the ones he was going to trust, and they became the General's Guard, Commander's Guard, but the name that stuck with them was this name, the Life Guard, because one of their jobs was to guard George Washington's life, and these were the men who turned on him. These were the ones who were plotting to kill George Washington, and I don't care how great a general you are, that you're the first president, or how strong you're supposed to be. That's a moment that's devastating. Your inner circle of men, your own troops that you handpicked, are the ones who turn on you. And obviously, it becomes this amazing moment, and not a moment I think that George Washington, of course, is very proud of.
Well, what did this say about the state of reality for the Continental Army circa 1775?
And that's the important part. You know, one of the things we do, especially with the Revolutionary War, is, you know, we tell this story. Because we're a country founded on legends and myths. And the legends and myths we love most are our own. And so we tell this story, you know, with a ragtag group who came together, rallied around democracy. We took on the British, the greatest fighting force known to mankind at the time. And because we held hands tight enough, we won and lived happily ever after. And it's a great story. It's not the real story. it was far more complex than any of that. And in fact, one of, you know, we think we're divided as a country today. Back then, we weren't all standing arm in arm, shoulder for democracy. What happened at the time is in 1776 in New York City, there were nearly as many loyalists on the British side as there were patriots on the American side. And in our own military, it was similar. The regiments from Massachusetts didn't get along with the regiments from Virginia, didn't know the regiments from Connecticut. We weren't standing together. There's a scene in the book, one of my favorites in there, where George Washington has the different regiments meeting up in Harvard Yard, Massachusetts, and the Massachusetts regiment starts making fun of the uniforms of the Virginia regiment. We're not even wearing the same uniform. Some guys are showing up in work shirts. And a fight breaks out. Huge fight, and George Washington races in on his horse, leaps off his horse, grabs two of the guys by the neck, and is basically shaking them, saying, stop fighting with each other. We're on the same team. And that is an opportunity for anyone plotting against us, because you have, you know, this military that, one, is not getting along, two, is not well-funded. You know, we tell the story that, oh, the young people signed up because they believe in democracy. No, they signed up because we were paying them to fight. And old people signed up too. Yeah, some of them signed up because we were paying them to fight too. And if we weren't making our payments, and we realized some of these troops said, wait, we don't have any gunpowder, and other troops said, wait, it's snowing and we don't have shoes, guess what happens? There's an opportunity for the British, who say, you know what? One thing is true back then as it is now. No one wants to be on the losing team. And so day by day, depending on who's doing well, the British or the Patriots, we're looking at it and saying, maybe I'll switch sides and go to the other team because they're going to win. And that's what happens here. And it becomes an opportunity to take out George Washington.
Well, and George Washington at the time is still really still coming into his own as a leader, right?
That's the thing is, you know, what we do with our heroes is we take them, our heroes today, we dip them in granite, and we build statues of them. George Washington is the greatest man who ever lived. He's arguably the most famous American, recognizable American who's ever lived. But we know the least about him. He's not this amazing superhero in a cape. His first battle, one of the first big battles, is the Battle of Brooklyn when the British invade in 1776. And we get our butts kicked. George Washington gets outgeneraled. He doesn't have the experience of the British generals. And what happens in that moment is he's pinned down. He's got the British in front of him, the East River behind him, and nowhere to run. And in that moment, George Washington does the best thing he always does. He adapts. He plans a daring escape in the middle of the night and commandeers every boat along the East River, and under the cover of this rolling fog that comes in, starts putting his men on all these boats trying to get them to safety on the other side. But here's the key moment, is George Washington won't get in any of the boats until he makes sure that all of his men, even the lowest ranked ones, get in the boats first. And that's the moment, right, where they see him risking his life for theirs. And not that that's the magical moment that brought all America together. There were plenty before and plenty after. But we need to remember that there was no United States back then. George Washington helped build it. And he did it by putting his arms around all this chaos, all this infighting, all this bad funding, all these losses, and pulling us together determined to make these United States.
You call the book The First Conspiracy. Obviously, there were other political conspiracies that existed over the years before that. You can just ask Julius Caesar. But at the dawn of the Revolution, what was the state of intelligence and counterintelligence as a military tool?
You know, it's pretty amazing. The British were great at it. The British were incredible at counterintelligence. They would open your mail. They would go through your mail, steal it again. You'd never know what they were doing. And they were they were slowly going through our military and looking at who needed money, who was down on their luck, who could be exploited. Those become assets, the same way the CIA does it today. And when George Washington got wind of this, one of the great things that happened is he builds a secret committee. He puts John Jay in charge of it, who, of course, later becomes the first Supreme Court justice. But in the early days of the war, he's running this committee on conspiracies, and he's knocking on doors, finding people who might be responsible, pulling them out of their house, interrogating them and interrogating different suspects. But what he's really doing is he's building America's first counterintelligence agency. Today, people will say, oh, the precursor to the CIA is the OSS, but it's not in my mind. maybe informed, but in actual what they're doing, it's this moment. It's John Jay and the Committee on Conspiracies around the plot to kill Washington. And to this day, in CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia, right now, there is a room dedicated to John Jay, who they call the founding father of counterintelligence.
What was it about the geography of New York at the time in 1775 and 1776 that made it kind of the perfect place for the British to cook up this conspiracy?
Yeah, you know, when we think of the Revolution, we always think of Lexington, Concord, and Massachusetts gets, you know, a lot of talk. And of course, listen, it's the Declaration and the Continental Congress of Philadelphia and you know, Pennsylvania gets a lot of play. What we forget is that the best battles and the biggest battles were really took place in New York, because from the British view, if you took New York, you controlled the waterways that kind of went straight up the colonies. Imagine a big giant V that cut upward. And if you controlled that V, you controlled that in and out, you sliced the colonies basically in half. And you literally could keep them from getting their food, getting their weapons, getting everything they wanted. It was strategically the best place for the British to go. And if they could grab it, my God, we're in trouble. And that's what they did. You know, we forget that the British, those battles, we would lose and retreat. We lost in Brooklyn, we retreated. We lost the next one, we retreated. We went to Long Island, we retreated from there. You kept going and going and going. We kept, the war itself was so many battles and then retreats. The one thing the British finally figured out, though, about George Washington, it wasn't that he was the best general. It's that, man, that guy wouldn't give up. And that's when they realized, we're not going to win this thing. This guy just won't give up. And that, to me, is one of the, of course, the great thing he's known for.
You mentioned water. Of course, the British had a navy, and the nascent United States, not even the United States yet, did not. And that meant that the person who was kind of the mastermind behind the plot could operate kind of with impunity from a ship out of New York Harbor.
Yeah, the true mastermind behind this entire plot is a man named the former governor of New York under British rule. His name is Governor William Tryon. And Governor Tryon, when we don't want British rule, loses his job. We don't need your services anymore. And he basically is worried about his life, races to a boat called the Duchess of Gordon is his boat. And he's a smart guy for racing to a boat because, as you said, we have no navy. And he also parks his boat next to one of the biggest fighters in the harbor. So anyone that goes near him is going to get blown out of the water. So this guy, Governor Tryon, basically spends the better part of 1775 and into 1776 plotting and planning and doing one thing only, and that is trying to figure out how he's going to get his job back. And it's George Washington who clearly stands in the way of that. And that's why he's the one who also uses counterintelligence, actually to much better effect than even we do. He starts looking and developing an entire network of men out there who are working on the American side, working on the Patriot side, but who are dissatisfied, who need money. And in the CIA world today, we call that, that's an opportunity. That's a potential asset. And one by one, person by person, he builds an entire group of people who are working secretly for him. And their plot is simple. When the British invade, they're going to give the word, and they're going to blow up some bridges. People who are on our side are going to switch sides. They're going to steal our cannons, and some say they're going to kill George Washington that very day. They're going to assassinate him, and other sides say, no, what they're going to do is going to actually kidnap him. But even if they kidnapped him, at the lower levels, if you got kidnapped in the Revolution, they would trade you. It would be a prisoner exchange. But at the higher levels, at George Washington's level, you would get hanged. George Washington's life is in danger, and it's all William Tryon who's doing it from this tiny little boat in the harbor that no one can touch.
So you mentioned the public hanging. Thomas Hickey is the one person who is hanged for his role in the conspiracy. The charges don't actually mention a plot to kill George Washington, though. So where do you come down on the evidence of an assassination attempt or just a kidnapping?
Yeah, you know, and this is where we try to be super careful. As you saw in the book, we give you all the evidence. We never say, this is most certainly what happened, because nobody knows. The plot was foiled. We never get to see what they were really going to do.
Right. Spoiler alert here.
Right. Spoiler alert. We know he lives, right? George Washington lives in this one. But the one thing we do know, you know, and there's people have argued over and over the course of truly centuries about what it was. And I don't want to spoil the ending. You'll see the evidence on both sides. But the one that convinced me in terms of what it really was is what one of the co-conspirators does after the war is over, when he admits to something to the British. That was the moment where I said, there is no reason for him to talk about this. It, you know, it's one thing for someone watching that hanging to say, oh my gosh, they were trying to kill Washington. It's one thing for even Washington's aides to say it, which is, to me, was a really interesting one. But it's another to have one of the people who was in on it say, here's what we were trying to do. And to me, that was the one that made me go, oh my gosh, this is a great story. And I think for me personally, the best part of it is that George Washington doesn't foil the plot. John Jay and the Secret Committee on Conspiracies doesn't foil the plot. And I think, and I want to keep this part secret, but the best twist in the book is how the plot does get foiled, because it's by an ordinary person who's sitting in the most unlikely of places on the most unlikely of nights and overhears a conversation he's never supposed to hear. And in that moment, this ordinary person arguably changes the course of history. And that's not the crazy part. That's the best part. That's how history is always made, by regular people who just have a moment where it all shifts.
So in the end, it sounds like it was the adventure that Joseph Ellis promised.
It was most certainly. I owe Joseph Ellis forever for sending me on this journey, because it was exactly that. It was an adventure. And Josh Mensch, who I wrote it with, we were lucky. He worked on me on the TV show when we did Lost History. I approached him and said, we're going to go on an adventure. You want to come down the rabbit hole with me? And we were just saying the other day, what an adventure it has been.
Well, congratulations! It really is a page turner, and a part of the American Revolution. I feel like I'm generally a pretty well informed person as far as history goes, and this was a story I had never heard.
Trust me, we felt the same way. And when do you ever get to hear a brand new story about George Washington?
Exactly. Well, Brad Meltzer, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Brad Meltzer is the author, along with Josh Mensch, of The First Conspiracy, The Secret Plot to Kill George Washington. Meltzer is also a mystery novelist and host of several shows on the History Channel. We first spoke with him a couple of years ago about a series of books for children about historical figures. You can find a link to that conversation at WUWM.com.